Hello there, and welcome to the Thinking Fellows podcast. My name is Caleb, and today I am joined by my father, Dr. Scott Keith, and by my brother, Joshua Keith, who I will I'll let him introduce himself in a moment. Man, I think he's been on before.
Yep.
Once or twice.
A long time ago.
Yeah.
And we'll let people know why you're on here in a minute. The Thinking Fellows is part of the 1517 podcast network of shows. You can go to 1517.org/podcasts to see all of our episodes there, as well as all the other shows on the 1517 podcast network. And while you're there, you can go ahead and check out the homepage at 1517, which updates with daily blogs, weekly preaching helps, new video content, podcasts every day of the week, and then some. All of that at 1517.org. And if you don't want to miss any of the content there, you can sign up for our newsletter. You can sign up for various frequency of newsletter. You can get it either every week or every month. So however you would like to receive that content, you can do that. And if you would like to support this show, you can subscribe on your favorite podcasting apps for free. Those include Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, Podcast Addict, and a whole bunch more. And if you do that, you'll get episodes right as they come out. Okay, guys. So today, I titled this in the computer for search engine purposes. It's going to be Rings of Power, and then in brackets, why you should or should not watch it, because we're in our Why You Should series. And I figured, you know, for the Thinking Fellows podcast, there's not a lot of opportunity to always jump on some sort of pop culture or current events train, and we tend to avoid it, especially if it's overtly political, overtly scandalous or something like that. And so we just don't get a ton of ways to just get the show on a hot search topic. And since we've done some episodes recently on Lewis and Tolkien within the past year, I figured this would be something we could at least tie into a subject we've talked about a handful of times. This time, Tolkien, and in a lot of ways, probably for some people, a reintroduction to his work, and for others, the realization that this is inspired by Tolkien, really, and maybe works with some of the source material, but it's an exploration into the idea of should properties of a particular author continue to expand and be built on after they're gone, after trustees of their work are gone, because now Christopher Tolkien has died as well.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And so how does the ownership of that work, how do we, does something like Rings of Power honor the work that Tolkien did and expand people and introduce people to it? Or is it simply just making money off of something that he, you know, profiting off of somebody else's ideas? So I think there's some of that there. And there's a lot of buzz about whether people should even watch Rings of Power at all, like if they should give one episode. And that's because before the show came out, in the publicity material, they included some of the actors and some of the production staff included marks about using the show as a platform for racial equity. And that has, you know, there's extreme version of the concern about this, but the moderate concern about this is changing the content of the lore or something like this, of the Lord of the Rings and the space that it takes place in order to make it a part of an American political activity and issue. And particularly an American one that we struggle with today, no matter what side of that sort of racial equity battle in the United States you are. I think it is a fair question to ask, should like medieval fantasy content be part of this political, philosophical struggle in the United States today? And I guess part of the question is, has it really been that much of a problem in the first handful of episodes in this? Like, people made a big deal about it before the show came out. in retrospect, is it actually a heavy-handed aspect of the show, no matter what side of that battle you're on? So
I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
It's a part of the show. So here's the thing. This stems out of literature. Mm-hmm. Fantasy literature and whatever you call it. I don't think it's right necessarily to call it. Josh can maybe answer this a little bit better since he reads way more fantasy than I do, but it's not properly like set in medieval times. Like you might do like a historical novel about it's a fantasy. It's set in a world that, as far as we know, doesn't actually exist.
I like that as far as we know caveat. Yeah.
It's Tolkien, he might have had an inside track to something.
Maybe a wardrobe.
Yeah, maybe a wardrobe. And so I think that's part of where this is hard. I also think we're kind of poisoned by the last movies that kept sort of, I mean, let's just say it, all the elves white and everything like that. And so visually that's what we have.
And I think we're poisoned by, maybe not, we have a perspective from other media where, I don't remember which one it was, but there was a movie or something recently where, it was Doctor Strange for me.
Yeah.
Where LGBTQ issues were thrown into pasted on badly, but yeah. They were talking about LGBTQ inequality.
Literally in another universe.
In another universe.
Where it's not a thing.
Where people have...
That's not an issue,
where they don't have that issue.
Have a satire about how it's ridiculous.
That's what drives me crazy about how Hollywood normally does this kind of thing, is that... and Marvel has gotten horrible at it. Mm-hmm. And it's not even the issue of it being a part of the story. It's how badly they paste it into the story, even when it doesn't make sense. I think with the Rings of Power, you know, you're on many, many levels just being asked to suspend disbelief. Mm-hmm. And in my opinion, this is sort of like, and I think I told you this before, Caleb, this is kind of how I was brought up to deal with race. And which is now sometimes seen as a racist position, which I don't think it is, but is to just sort of not look for color, look for the person, or look, in the case of a movie, look at a character and how well it's written, how well it's acted, and not really sort of see the color of the person there.
One might say judging something by the content of its character and not by the color of its skin.
Or in this case, by the content of the writing and the content of the acting. Rather than by, you know, how my current culture views that person's skin color and the necessity for this, that, or the other. In that way, they're doing a pretty good job, in my opinion.
It's a much better job than some other entries.
Or even how the trailers portray what you said, like actors and show developers kind of portraying that it was going to have a message like that.
Yeah.
And so far, other than just subtle things like putting characters of high power or high standing as people of color, and I can only suspect, only three episodes are out at the time of this recording, but I can only suspect that with this theme of what they're talking about, we're probably going to see the main antagonist as a white male.
But that would have been the case anyway.
Yeah. I mean,
for sure. But in Tolkien's sense, the enemy was faceless. It was.
Oh, okay. Well, I get that. But at the same time, when we read Tolkien, right, we're, like Caleb said and did, we're sort of injecting on it Western European white culture, which is fine. I mean, that's what Tolkien knew,
and that's what inspired it.
And that's what inspired it, right? The elves are Norwegians, as far as I can see.
Yeah,
men are sort of like Germanic men,
Anglo-Saxon
men. Orcs are monsters, and you know, you kind of dwarves are Scottish.
I think
they all have Scottish accents.
Yeah, they do have Scottish accents in all the trails.
They're kind of my people.
What if they're Irish or who knows?
But, you know, that's But at the same time, that doesn't, that can all still, none of that matters if the writing is good and the acting is good and how you portray it on film. Some people, like Rod Rosenblatt, would say, don't even put the stuff on film because it destroys what you've
created,
the picture you've created in your head, that the problem here isn't, you know, what color the actors are that they choose to act out the various characters. The problem is that you're trying to view it on a screen at all.
See, I when I had first heard Rod say that, I thought he was crazy. And as I've grown slightly older, I mean, I'm 25. I'm still very young.
Now you're ancient.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, old man status over here. I find myself agreeing with that more and more lately because everything is almost just not to...
Well, because film's an interpretation.
Yeah. It's an interpretation, but because of your whatever image you have in your head reading, it can destroy that image and almost ruin it, and almost ruin that other form of media for you because you have this pure image in your head of what you know to yourself it is supposed to look like, and it just, it squashes it.
Yeah. I'd like to, I think this is good. I just wanted to address, I don't want to make the whole show about this particular controversy. I just wanted to address it because it is a big in a lot of people's minds. Should I even watch it if it's going to be yet another one of these social justice platforms? So far, it's really not as blatant as so much other media.
No.
I think it's almost unnoticeable so far.
And the other portion of it that I would say is that, you haven't had any characters do any monologues about racism or something like that. It's not completely out of place. And they are only, this is actually, also unique in today's world. They're only messing with characters who don't really have a previous description written down or portrayed on film somewhere else.
Yeah.
And so, it's not like they recast Elrond as a black man, right? So far, no, so agree. Good on that kind of thing.
Yeah, of course.
So other questions about why you should or why you shouldn't is this, how related is this actually to the Lord of the Rings? And this is kind of one of the reasons I brought Josh on. Josh, mm-hmm. you are not just a Tolkien fan, but you read a lot of
fantasy.
Mid to high fantasy, which are different kind of categories. But that's a lot of what you read. And you read a lot.
Oh, yeah.
And so I figured you'd be that. You've got good knowledge of the Silmarillion and some of the source material for this show. So the question is, if you are a fan of The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings, things that Tolkien himself sort of wrote in their entirety, is this as an expansion fun? Is it worth doing? Will it enhance sort of your experience of Middle Earth, or should you and should it be taken seriously for that reason, or is it just kind of fan fiction based off of this that can be fun but doesn't really affect like Middle Earth in quote unquote canon in your mind?
So as we've seen so far in the first three episodes, there's nothing that sticks out as being particularly either offensive or egregious as far as going off of what has been already written, as far as the Silmarillion, as far as the Lost Tales, or anything that they're taking for inspiration for this show. Nothing is egregious. Nothing is out of its way to kind of make things different. A lot of the Silmarillion, a lot of people haven't read because of the way that it's written. Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit are written in a very tale-told way, whereas The Silmarillion, a lot of people compare to almost like an encyclopedia, where you feel like you're just getting a lot of...
It's like that middle section of Moby Dick.
I tried to read The Silmarillion, and I tapped out.
Yeah, it takes a lot of people to kind of get past a lot of the first early stages of the Silmarillion to get through. But as far as as what is being used here, I would say that so far the content is good. We're getting a lot more built up on characters that we never even saw in the books, and none of it is wrong.
Are these characters in the Silmarillion? Like, do you like if you've read the Silmarillion, are you going to notice? I don't even see. I'm having so bad at this. The main elf dude, is he in the Silmarillion?
Main elf dude. So
Elrond?
Elrond?
No. The guy that just, I'm not supposed to do spoilers.
Oh, well,
actual main elf dude in this story.
Oh, the one who's part of the guard?
No.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, the one who's...
Unless Josh knows the answer, I've assumed no.
As far as I'm aware, and I don't claim to have perfect knowledge of these things, like you said, I read a lot of fantasy, love Tolkien a lot. I love a lot of his works, and I've gone very in-depth on his works, but I have read a lot of other fantasy, so small details may have been lost to my memory. But as far as I know, this is a brand new character.
Okay.
And there's the some themes space go, for the that. Themes go, yeah, and there is some space for that. And the themes going on of what is happening and where is happening, I won't say because we're trying to avoid spoilers, are accurate. Not necessarily to the Silmarillion, but to some of the other tales as well.
I think it's fair to say from the title, Rings of Power,
yes,
that perhaps what will end up happening is that there will all of a sudden be the...
Rings of Power. Okay, from the trailers and from the characters involved and the known characters involved universally, okay, it is not a spoiler to say that they are leading up to the formation of the Rings of Power.
No. Right.
That is not a spoiler.
It's not a spoiler to say that become due to the title and due to even just the contents of, if even you give the first episode a glance, that is very apparent, if it wasn't already from the title, that is going to become the main theme of this show, is the creation and the events both leading up to and after the Rings of Power are created.
Yeah, that's, and for, you know, for those who do or don't know, this occurs thousands of years before Frodo and...
Does anybody know how long this is before? I thought it was like 1,000.
It's like 1,500, right?
Roughly.
Okay.
I'm trying to remember if it's even that many or if it's just several hundred.
I thought it was 15.
I might be wrong.
Whatever, who cares?
I might be wrong.
But it's a long time,
yes,
right?
Like, it is.
It's
centuries. Centuries on centuries.
Yeah, so... farther to the Reformation in our world than... to this.
Yeah.
So you have a lot of history going on.
Yeah.
So from that perspective, so far, so good. I know that people have pointed out that some of the characters introduced and things like that create timing issues for some of the extended lore. I think that could bother some people. For me, here's one of the things with Tolkien's extended universe. Outside of The Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit, he didn't finish a lot of it. It's pieces and bits that are glued together by Christopher Tolkien and others who have gone through the work and glued information together.
Yeah.
And so
that's not an uncommon thing with writers who meet an unfortunate end in their
lives. He was old when they were published.
Like that happened when to go slightly off, but just to stay on the subject of it, that happened with Robert Jordan's Wheel of Time when he passed away. His wife then oversaw a very popular writer and one of my favorites, Brandon Sanderson, to kind of finish the series up because of his knowledge of the source material and his respect for the subject matter and the creator. So it's not an uncommon thing for that to happen.
And so I think, you know, there's some creative license here. Also, things like the Silmarillion and other pieces of lore, like you pointed out, are not easily accessible. And so to make that into a narrative story that people will be able to enjoy, I think is fine.
There's definitely merit in it, but my only hesitation to that, as someone who is clearly maybe a little bit more involved than... definitely more involved than the average person, but then I like to think that I'm at least a little more involved than even people who have an interest in something like Tolkien's literature, where these corporations, and to go just a little bit off, and or at least back to one of the things you were asking, which is this just a cash grab? Of course it is. This is a big media corporation who is creating this series and playing on the idea that you recognize this world and wanting to make money, naturally. They're a corporation, they're a company who wants to make money. That's their complete goal. Whether or not they want to respect the source material is completely up to them, but we just have to wait and see. It's up to and it's not even necessarily up to the corporation themselves. It's made up by the actual people who have souls and have love and care for the subject matter to oversee that it has actually dealt with respect. And it's not always the case. We saw how the Hobbit movies went. And I mean, a lot of people really like them because they like the actors, or they like that it's a lot more of an adventurous story.
It's not like the original trilogy.
No, and it's not. And it's
no,
not,
they added characters.
Not only did they add characters, and they added love interest where there were none, yeah, because Hollywood loves love interest, yeah, but they also took what is one very short book compared to something like
The Lord of the Rings.
Like the Lord of the Rings trilogy.
Yeah.
And made it three movies. Out three movies unnecessarily.
Made
and
it even, as long as the Lord of the Rings movies.
And even if you tried to make an argument that it was for just to be able to tell the narrative in a more adventurous way, they deviated so far from the story itself that it was almost completely unrecognizable.
Yeah, so that's kind of how I've seen Rings of Power is, I don't even see them as a Lord of the Rings movie, which I'm, you know, they're diverged from the book on
numerous occasions.
But yeah, The Hobbit really kind of did its own thing.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, okay, this is truly based on the idea of Middle Earth,
yes,
that Tolkien created. It's not based on any sort of kind of one-to-one work of Tolkien.
And no. The only thing that's fixed is that particular events have to happen to get the ring into Frodo's hands one day.
Right.
Like, and that's the only really part of this that if they mess with too much, the average person will care about.
It's simply, well, maybe not simply, but this is a way of making money, but it's also a way of kind of telling more of the story that we already know. It's why we often get things like prequels, is to give more explanation for what is either unknown or wants to be built upon. And like we said, the Silmarillion isn't necessarily on nearly as many people's radar as Lord of the Rings or The Hobbit, yeah, is. So it's to kind of give the idea. We hear very early on in Lord of the Rings, whether you've read the books or watched the movies, that there are rings of power. Gandalf mentions that rings of power are dangerous things.
The story is told a little bit too.
Like, yeah, they give some background on how.
But there's more than one.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The very beginning, I forget if it's in the standard cut, but of the director's cut of Lord of the Rings, starts with the story of the creation. It's very short, but it gives you an idea that three rings of power were created.
Yeah.
Then five more for the dwarves, and then nine more for men, and then one ring to rule over them all. So you have a general idea of what that is, but you don't necessarily know what it means. What makes the one ring rule over them all? You have no idea.
All we know is it makes hobbits invisible.
Yeah.
Yeah. not necessarily other people invisible.
Well, so what I don't know if you guys know, you may or may not, but the reason why it makes hobbits invisible is to give it a really short description of how it works. I know we're going a little off track here, but it's almost like if you watch Pirates of the Caribbean, Jack Sparrow's compass leads you to what your heart most wants.
It enhances natural power.
It enhances your
and hobbits go unnoticed.
Yeah, exactly. A hobbit's wish is to not be noticed, uh-huh, almost genetically, as we're not to give too many spoilers, but as we're seeing with what are the precursor or at least the predating race of hobbits.
We've been calling
them
proto hobbits.
Yeah, proto hobbits. That's a good.
That's
term.
In the trailers too.
Yeah, and throughout that, and if you watch through the first episode to give a minor spoiler, it's very apparent that they're showing that this race of people has a culture around not being seen at all.
Yeah.
That's why the ring grants that power to Frodo. Yeah,
we get it.
Yeah, and to Smeagol, and what you find out through the Lost Tales and things that you would read further on in Tolkien's writing is that Smeagol was actually one of these proto-hobbits.
Mm-hmm.
So he also had the invisibility, and Sauron, we see him wearing it. He doesn't turn invisible. He just has immense power because he's a demigod. He's a Maiai, and he wants power. And so he obtains it through that ring as a vessel of granting your wish, basically.
Yeah. So far, it's fun. It's not bad. It's not incredible yet. From just a TV style perspective, it is. And Josh, I didn't watch Game of Thrones, so I didn't know this. But Josh pointed out it did this. I think some of the zombie TV shows did this too. But
yeah, Walking Dead.
And it's a very just common way of doing TVs now and movies. It is following four, maybe five
different
stories,
perspectives,
all in different locations throughout the show, and So each episode has, you know, X amount of minutes dedicated to each story, clipping in and out. This is a very familiar way of storytelling. Cool. My beef with this is that it's now used as a way of basically accomplishing nothing for 8 episodes and then doing a 2-episode big finale.
Yeah,
that's like an Avengers-style crossover where all the exciting stuff happens in the last 2 episodes. And it's just so common now. I'm getting exhausted of this storytelling format.
So, as much as it is that theme or a pattern with media is getting very boring nowadays, it's getting a little overdone. You're right. It's Game of Thrones, Walking Dead, almost any cinematic TV.
Now, albeit the Lord of the Rings trilogy, original trilogy, does this too.
That's what I was going to say. It's a bit more on point, or at least within the scope of Lord of the Rings to do it this way, because Lord of the Rings is some of the first method through Lord of the Rings. You see Frodo and Sam going off doing their own thing, Aragorn, Legolas, Gimli, them and Gandalf, and then Pippin and Merry. Like, it's cutting between three different groups, and even a couple more, because you're sometimes just getting the perspective of Saruman and the orcs and Uruk-hai.
Or just Gandalf.
No, so it's not completely out of taste for a Lord of the Rings media show to kind of work this way, but I do understand that critique is that this formula is getting a little old.
Why I think it's different in some movies, especially in movies that accomplish it in like one movie, is that in a movie you have 2 to 3 hours-ish max to accomplish that unifying thing, and so in the snippets that you get of the characters, let's say the 15, 20-minute snippets of each person's story, it accomplishes more. In these long-form TV shows where each episode is an hour and they're planning on 10 or 12 episodes in a season, they can accomplish so little in that hour that it begins to get like frustrating. Like if we were looking at a map, it's almost like in an hour-long episode, the character you're most invested in moved 10 feet. And you're like, this is brutal.
Yeah, that's
But don't
fair.
You think that's just how this stuff is now? Like, when I was a kid, shows were standalone. Not every episode. Like, okay, I'm going to go way back here. Magnum P.I., okay? Greatest show ever produced.
Didn't see that coming.
I'm sure you didn't. Each episode was a standalone episode. It had its own story, had its own beginning, middle, and end. But there, in every season, there were several episodes that were also telling a bigger story.
There's a through thread.
And if you kind of watched it all 8 seasons from first episode,
you finally got a full story.
But out of 22 episodes a season, you would maybe only get 2 or 3 of those that were connected to sort of the larger story. But that changed. Like, that changed a long time ago.
Can I say that with things like Lord of the Rings, and I would assume Game of Thrones, and some of these others, part of what it's relying on to do what this one's doing is that you already care about certain characters. So, like, the reason they don't have to create a character that you are emotionally attached to because you are from previous knowledge of the material, if you fall in that category. So we don't have to move Galadriel's story forward quickly because certain people are already really invested in her.
That's fair.
Same if you know the characters who are going to be involved in the formation of the Rings of Power, who have been introduced in the first handful of episodes.
Yeah.
If you already know who those characters are, they don't have to do much to get you on the hook.
Yeah, and I think that's part of the goal of not even necessarily the big corporations themselves in producing things like these, but also just the interests of the people who actually like write these stories and direct these stories is the idea that they also care about these characters and they know that these characters are likable. It's the reason why Disney is producing so many Star Wars TV shows with characters we already know is because part of our
and doing a solid mediocre job with it.
part of our primordial like human brains is that there's just stimulation with something we recognize. You could say that of a child.
That's part of the That's part of sort of the archetype that God created us with, to sort of be able to recognize these themes, and that these themes exist in history, and that it's not random that they exist in history, that at the end of the day they point to Christ. Now, what I'm not sure Hollywood will be able to pull off is that archetype, because
it's they're the not world, using a final writing,
and the world is currently anti-archetype, anti sort of good character that is sort of the symbolic character that you can relate to Christ. It's anti that, which is, you know, definitely you've told me this more than I knew this, Caleb, is that the what's the dragon porn one called?
Jeez, I think I'm gonna have to cut that. Good job. But
the dragon what?
Game of Thrones was written intentionally to try to disrupt what Tolkien did.
Yeah,
that's true.
That's very true. And it's one of the reasons I kind of refuse to take part in them.
See, that's I don't want to go too far off of, because this whole discussion is supposed to be Rings of Power, and I could talk about
this is a theological show, buddy.
That's fair. And it's also a philosophical discussion.
That's our trade right there.
Yeah, George R. R. Martin, the creator of the Game of Thrones series, or the Song of Ice and Fire series, as it's known in its
book form.
Written form, because Game of Thrones, the title is actually just the title of the first book. The whole idea of these books, are that they kind of destroy that common archetype of you have very blatant heroes, very blatant villains, and that there's no gray area, or that you can't be either, or that those things don't exist within ourselves in both forms. George R. R. Martin also took, spoilers for anyone who hasn't seen Game of Thrones, I won't go too in-depth, but goes out of his way to also take the care that you have for specific characters and almost kind of throw that like mud in your face to go...
He hates Aragorn.
Well, he hates Aragorn, but he also... I wouldn't say that he hates his own characters, but he goes out of his way to make sure that you
don't... Seems like he hates the good ones.
Yeah. He definitely... Well, there's a very popular theme for people like George of wanting to portray a very blatant nihilism in the world, as they see as a realism of the world, that the good guy doesn't always win.
Yeah.
And that is a deconstruction of, he goes
farther than that though.
He does.
Because
yes, he does.
I mean, I would say that in Tolkien, so if you were to sort of do, if you were to do sort of a comparison between the writings of Lewis, the fantasy writings of Lewis, and the fantasy writings of Tolkien, in the fantasy writings of Lewis, there's always a very clear archetype, and the good guy does always win, because that's how he's writing. I'd say even in the space trilogy, that's except for maybe that Hideous Strength, which goes real weird, but that's what happens there. That's not what happens in The Lord of the Rings or The Hobbit. You have very conflicted characters who very much show, even in Hobbits, very much show sort of the good and the bad that's in all of us. I think Martin, nihilistic is probably a good way to say it, because it's not just that the good guy doesn't always win. There's a pointlessness to everything.
Yeah.
And it's in that pointlessness that you lose all meaning. So why are you fighting for good when it's just all pointless? This is just all of our various banners vying for political position to get to the Iron Throne. So nothing matters. Even, like, I didn't read the books, but even... are we allowed to do spoilers from something that's been out for like 5 years?
Yeah. Okay.
Just clarifying. So even like Daenerys, right? You know, she when they set her up as a ruler, she's supposed to be just, right?
Yes.
This is sort of the point of departure between Daenerys and other rulers that you've known so far in this story.
Yeah.
But then he doesn't like that either, right? And he's already killed off all of the Starks who could have been just.
Yeah.
And so it's, you know, it's very much meaningless. Everything's meaningless without the ability to point to Christ.
Yeah.
Yeah.
True. I would say, you know, I have seen episodes of Game of Thrones. I know well above it. I would say in this way, Rings of Power is infinitely more watchable for the average person. Yes. It is not sex and gore. Correct. Like Game of Thrones is. So far, I guess we're three episodes.
It won't be. That would be so far off. I mean,
oh yeah,
Tolkien was, you know, his entire life a faithful Roman Catholic. If they do that to this, that's so off character of anything he would have ever written into any of his stories.
There was some fear about this based off of some of the early stuff in the Amazon acquisition. So far, it's not happening, which
means... Three episodes in, so far, nothing along that line.
And nothing hinting that it will go that direction?
No, I was actually slightly worried in the second episode, because you see some captives at one point, a lot of them women, and I thought it was going to take that turn
at You've been
first.
Watching too much Game of Thrones.
I have been, to where I thought, I'm like, oh, please don't take this kind of turn. And they
I don't think they will.
So, but I think
there are literally millions of Christian Tolkien fans that would freak out.
That's true. And but the other thing that I always have to stop and check myself with is that this is fantasy. And to go back to what we were talking about very early on into the episode is the idea of how we were talking about wanting to see a lack or almost wishing that there's a lack of our own world's politics in a show that is supposed to be fantasy. This isn't our world.
There's been a lack. They've not done it. So yes. I'm kind of proud of them.
What I'm saying is I'm very proud because I had to check myself with that, thinking about that, where I saw women captives and thought because of things like Game of Thrones, oh, I know where this is going to go.
Oh, that they're going to have an agenda.
Yeah, that they're going to either have an agenda or that a very heinous thing that has never existed in a Tolkien world, as far as we know, is going to happen. Yeah.
Or exists in the background and not as front material.
I have to remind myself that the evil of that world is possibly not the same as the evil of our world. It's the same thing as seeing representation of race, but it not being pointed out to, because racism in that world, as we've seen so far, isn't what we experience in our world. It's not necessarily based off of skin color.
Yeah, that is funny, because in Game of Thrones...
dwarves and elves don't like each other.
Yeah. But they call them knife ears. Or they make fun of them because they have bearded women. That's a very refreshing idea in fantasy, is that you don't need to rely on the evil of our own world to portray something like that.
Well, which is exactly what Game of Thrones does, though, because it much more than Lord of the Rings is a fantasy set in medieval Earth.
More or less our world.
Yeah, with all of our same sort of politics and our exact same kind of evil and exact same kind of lust for power.
Yes.
Not,
it's no different.
Not taken into sort of
Another realm. To kind of go back... To just point out the fact that we should be talking about Rings of Power, but to talk about Game of Thrones, part of the reason for that is that George R. R. Martin is almost telling us almost his version of the war of the houses of the White and Red Roses in England.
Yeah, yeah.
He's basing it off of that. He's more or less telling that story through his own world that is slightly more fanciful than our own. It has dragons.
It's a lot more. He needs to study a little more history.
It's much more of his fanciful take on it, with also inserting his own idea of what a zombie is into it too. Yeah. But with Rings of Power, I'm very happy to see that that those things that might just be something of our world are, and that we often point out as thinking are so silly, like we talked about with Doctor Strange trying to have like a satirical moment of going like, oh, you guys still base things off of skin color, or oh man, you still pay for food.
Yeah, you still have money.
Yeah, it's like, money's still a concept to you. It's like, yeah, it's a different world. It's like how Star Trek is based in our world, but they've progressed past those things. And
is a little on the nose for it sometimes. Yeah,
but really haven't, because they still go to war all the time.
They still go to war all the time. All the time.
Just not on Earth.
Just not on Earth. It's just with a bunch of wrinkleheads.
Well, they broke that in...
they did break
it. In Enterprise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's just refreshing to see that's... Not necessarily, and I don't know, we have three episodes. They might make more of a deal of it in the future. But just to kind of get that message out, because Hollywood these days feels like they have to say something, because they feel like it's almost unjust to say nothing, even if it is a world that has nothing to say about it.
Yeah.
And it's so sad, because it's such a good opportunity to move past those evils of our own world. And that's the whole point of fantasy, is to have an escape to a different world where the evils of our own world might not exist, but we can still see the ideas of evil in them. We can still recognize things as evil naturally.
Yeah. Or even if it's likely in a lot of cases, because it's people, the same evils, but not the exact same politics.
Correct.
Or location. for those, and so it's good. So you know, we're at the time that we usually go to here. So the standing question: should you or should you not? I think it depends. If you don't, if minor inconsistencies with existing lore are really going to drive you up a wall,
then maybe not. Maybe it's not for you.
Maybe skip it. If you just enjoy fantasy TV and Game of Thrones was too much for you and is too much for you, I'm sure you'll actually enjoy this.
Yeah, and even if you're somebody who has watched Lord of the Rings or has read some of the more common books like Hobbit and Lord of the Rings, this is maybe a good way for you to see subject matter and go, oh, I might watch this show. It was a good show if it ends up being good. And it might be a good avenue for you to look into something like Silmarillion and see what some of these things were based on.
I'd say even if you were a purist, if you were willing to endure the three movies of The Hobbit.
Oh, yeah.
Go for it.
Then go for it.
Yeah, if you were willing to endure
this. Because I will honestly hope.
I'm not a purist on these because I'm just not. See, where they're going to get me is I hear Netflix is doing Narnia. So that's when your homeboy is going to like check in and be like, oh, nope. But I've read Lord of the Rings and I've read The Hobbit. It's been a long time and it just, neither one grabbed me in the same way that Lewis's fiction does. And so, I understand, if this is your thing, you're going to have a hard time with it. But even if it is your thing and you watch the Hobbit movies and we're okay with them or even watch them and just endure them, give it a shot. Yeah. To me, it's in a very similar vein of what they did there.
It's less goofy than those, honestly.
Yes. Yeah, they're taking, it seems like out of the Silmarillion, they're taking sort of like loose source material and trying to write episodic story out of it.
There's definitely some creative license being taken, but it's not the most extreme example we've seen in recent times.
No, and it's definitely taking advantage of the fact that Tolkien's writing style in something like the Silmarillion has a lot of gaps in it, where it jumps from era to era, where you get like loose definitions of some things that have happened for some people, but some things were going on in different areas.
And honestly, this is probably going to be digestible for people who don't need an entire new dictionary of categories in their mind from this fantasy thing. Right?
Yeah.
Because it's like, it's going to take the most important terms and explain them. But if you go deep into Tolkien, you have to have like a whole Encyclopedia Britannica of Tolkien like too. Memorized in order to like keep track of it all.
I know. I'm just not good at it with Tolkien. The names could be slightly different. You know what I'm saying?
Just a little more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some of them are just really hard to keep track of because they're so darn similar.
To go slightly off just of that theme, what's really funny is that as hard as that is for something like Tolkien, there are a lot of media that struggle a lot more with that.
Yeah.
I only loosely know something like Kingdom Hearts. I know that there's like 8 characters all named the same thing in that.
Yeah.
So there are differences, but I can definitely see the struggle.
Yeah.
Yeah. So probably, I mean, if you just like okay television, that's exciting. They spent $21 billion on this. It's going to look okay. Yeah. So
it doesn't look bad.
So I think, I think it's going to look good and it'll be marginally entertaining. And even if you don't like it or you think it clashes with the real lore too much, it'll be a talking point. So it's probably worth a little bit of a watch, and certainly brings Tolkien material back into the fray. And honestly, even if they go awry with it, which there's ample opportunity to, like, something really egregious, there might be an opportunity for people to publicly talk about why that would be disagreeable to a Catholic like Tolkien, and why messing with his traditions is just as egregious as messing with somebody else's traditions in our society who we actually care about. And so, there's definitely an eye to be kept here. But if you're just looking for a fun fantasy watch, it's probably the best thing in 20 years.
It's not as gory or as nude.
Explicit, yeah.
As the other one.
And it's not as goofy as the last Hobbit movie, so it's probably...
It's a good down the road, or just right down the middle of the road show to watch so far.
All right.
So, yeah.
Well, cool. Well, thank you for listening to the Thingy Fellows. Hopefully this little social excursus with a little Tolkien was fun for listeners who enjoy that kind of thing. And
I had fun.
And thank you, Josh, for coming on the show. And
no problem at all.
We will catch you next time. If you'd like to support the Thingy Fellows, you can go to 1517.org/donate, and you can subscribe on your favorite podcasting apps. Thank you. We will catch you next time. Bye.
Bye.